It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, welcome to the wrap-up on a wonderful Wednesday night where I'm joined by Aiden and Zarar. We're slowly accumulating members of the wrap-up team, and you're going to see every game there's going to be one more. And the Raptors and the Celtics have just proved once again that they cannot play a normal game together. Overtime preseason basketball, starters sucked, bench were amazing and brought them back into it, and the Raptors win in overtime. Let's talk about the end of the game before we get into like the starters, because I do have thoughts, but they're a little more negative than what happened at the end of the game. So let's start with the positive, get into the negatives. What jumped out to you guys, Aiden? I'll start with you. What jumped out with that bench group that brought them back in it, whether it was a style of play or a couple individual players?
I mean, you don't want to get overly excited with bench production against, you know, the third stringers of another team. But this final camp spot, and again, you know, when you're a basketball nerd and like you're really concerned about things like the 15th spot on a roster, and I like Josh Jackson's making a legitimate case for himself. Juancho's made it pretty clear that he's fairly one-dimensional. Like, you can tell when he gets the ball, he just kind of wants to give it up. He's very linear with what he's doing. And then you see Josh Jackson out there, and he's scoring at all three levels. It's pretty crazy. I don't know how sustainable it is, but, you know, he shone in the fourth quarter and in overtime, and a big reason why they won this game. Not that that really matters, but, yeah.
Zarar, you want to talk about Josh
Jackson? I think the contrast is everything in this game. You know, like you saw that first half, and, you know, somebody made a comment in here that Fred should never start against Boston. I agree. I think they just own him. They just own him defensively, offensively. They post him up. They destroy him. And there's nothing he can do about it, it seems. But in the second half, completely different story, because this unit really moved the ball well. And whether it be Fred Brown or Josh Jackson or even Delano Banton, like, you know, just
Gabe Brown.
Just good ball movement, man. And like, they didn't do anything fancy. It was just basic stuff, getting up the floor, giving the ball up, instead of trying to go one-on-one. And that's the thing with the starters. There's too much one-on-one going on with pretty much everybody on the roster. That seems to be like their option. Whenever the regular play breaks down, it's like one-on-one immediately. And the second unit sort of resisted that urge, and it paid off for them.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? Everybody, sorry, Orin. It looked like everybody would, for the starting guys, it just looked like everybody's trying to test out their new, like what they've been practicing. You know, it was just like, okay, your turn. All right, your turn.
Yeah, like I said I was going to not talk about the starters till the end, but I lied. Let's do it, because you're right. You made a good point about the contrast. I totally agree that the ball movement was totally different. And the frustration comes from like, I don't think that it's Nick Nurse's fault necessarily, or that they're trying things out necessarily. I think this is exactly the type of defensive team that takes the Raptors out of anything they can do, which is that they switch a lot. The Boston Celtics are big everywhere. They switch everywhere. And the Raptors, as you saw in that first half, just devolve into iso ball because they don't have counters to that. They don't have a pick and roll big. They just don't have anything that can really end that switch heavy scheme. Siakam was really good. I'm happy with how he looks. Like, he was the one guy who, him and OG, I thought, in ISO were getting what they wanted. Otherwise, it looked terrible, and it was just ISO ball. And it was really refreshing. You know, part of it is just that they were playing worse backups in terms of what the Celtics had. But part of it was, yeah, like, they made a little bit more of an effort to make the extra pass than I thought the starters did. I remember talking really like high on how the starters moved the ball against the Jazz, but that was also the Jazz. And in this game, I can remember like three off the top of my head where the starters just took the shot instead of making that extra pass. And Fred was one of them who took the open three in transition when Barnes was standing under the basket, yeah. just mad that he didn't get the ball. That happened a bunch, and it was really – it's not exactly what you want to see at this point in preseason, I don't
think. There is a lot of Cam love, so we should quickly, before we go completely negative, shout out Cam. I mean, he hit two threes.
Yo, that was crazy. My mind is blown by Cam hitting threes.
Somebody in the quick reaction said that Cam looked pissed to be out there. Like, he was angry to be out there with the other four scrubs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he should be. But he was great. I did not believe in Cam ever hitting threes in an NBA game. But good on him. Clearly worked on it. Clearly has the confidence to take it. And he hit a couple.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, I thought Gary played okay early. It was kind of a reminder. Like, people keep writing Gary off as, you know, the guy that doesn't fit or whatever. But he's truly the one dude, other than Pascal, that's able to create, I mean, we've talked about this before, create nothing into something. Especially in that mid-range, especially when things are stagnant. And I mean, it's preseason. We're not like, I think there was definitely a lack of tenacity and killer instinct throughout the game from the starters, and whether that's just fatigue or disinterest, whatever. So like, we can't read too much into it. And I think that what we can read into is that the margin of success for this team is very thin when they're not giving it their all the time. And I think that's kind of where we as fans are concerned, is that like the Raptors are, their skill level is not to the height of like, I don't know, Philly or Brooklyn, where they can kind of take it down a gear and still figure it out. Like, the Raptors kind of need to all be locked in all the time. And you kind of see that firsthand tonight.
Yeah, or Boston. I thought Boston was just showed that they were clearly a step ahead of them in a different tier. Like, you can put the preseason qualifier there, but both teams had their starting lineups out there. Their big guys played. And yes, you make a good point about how the Raptors need to go at 100% at all times in order to challenge teams like that. But I also thought that, like, this is what I was trying to get to at the beginning. Like, the deficiencies of this roster really show against a team like Boston. And you can blame Nick Nurse all you want for not being very original on the offensive end. You can blame the starters for getting a little ISO heavy or like shot happy at times. But ultimately, this is what this team is. It's a team that struggles in the half court against good defenses like Boston. And that's why I was a little disappointed tonight, just because like we go into every offseason being like, what's going to change? Who's going to be the guy that changes the half court offense? And as much as, yes, there's a preseason qualifier, I think it's pretty clear that it's going to be a similar deal against the best defenses in the league.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's no doubt. Not that we needed this game to determine this, but Boston is definitely ahead of us in pretty much every category. And they also play as a team, and they also have some semblance of an offense on how they want to approach it. It's not like the Raptors at all. As much as you hate them, and I do hate them, you know, I hate them, right? But you have to give them credit that they know what their identity is, and they subscribe to it. And even when their backups come in, they never take bad shots. Can you count how many bad shots the Celtics took today? Like, shots that you would go be like, oh, I don't know about that one. They don't. Yeah. You contrast the bad shots with the Raptors, you can count a lot more than that. And I think that's just when you subscribe to the your offense, and you understand that if you follow your role, you will get a good shot out of it. They do that. The Raptors don't. And I think that's the major difference between the two.
I thought the Celtics controlled the game to that point. Like, I thought that the Celtics didn't run very original offense. I thought both teams were playing ISO ball, but that's how the Celtics want to play. They like ISO ball. They like getting in the paint and then spraying it out through isolation. That's just how a lot of their offensive system is built. And whereas the Raptors, it is not at all. The Raptors want to get out and transition, avoid the half court, and they didn't do that at all in the first half. And I find myself missing a guy like Kyle Lowry in this game. And like, to be fair to Fred, he wasn't going 100%, but it was just one of those games where Kyle is able to control a game and not always let the other team dictate how you play and take you out of iso ball when he knows it's not working. And the Raptors, I guess, with this starting five, just don't have a guy who does that, who is able to not only settle things, but actually run stuff that's going to get guys involved in the best positions for them to succeed.
Yeah, that should be Freddie. And I think that's kind of what's frustrating about Freddie is even like moving him off ball is about getting another shooter on the weak side, but it's also kind of about, I don't know, trying somebody else out that can control the tempo or at the right tempo than Freddie, because he didn't really do it last year. And I think that he was supposed to do that in place of Kyle. And I think so that is kind of disappointing. And again, like context matters. Last year, with like a lot of the offensive load was on Freddie, but I was surprised that he didn't have that patience or wisdom that Kyle provided. So we'll see this year if that changes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Oren.
No, I don't really have any more thoughts on the starters. I was going to get back to
let's do
the
that.
Guys who kind of closed out the game. You mentioned
Coloco a little bit. I thought he showed something beyond, more than what people were expecting of him. I thought his little mid-range jumper was quite, it looked good, first of all, it went in, but the form looked pretty solid. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me that he sort of has the green light to take that shot. And his hook looked pretty good too. So he's been sold so far as like a pick and roll kind of crash the paint type of dude. But I think in this game, he showed two aspects, the jump hook and the little jumper, which were both a little surprising, positively.
He does not look like the player he looked like in summer league. Like, he really looks like he's improved quite a bit in a short period of time. And yeah, the touch around the rim was definitely nice to see. But in summer league, he just didn't know where he was going on offense. And I thought he has a way better sense of space now. And defensively, like, holy, this guy is solid. He got switched onto Tatum a couple times. He got switched onto everyone, and he's staying. I did not peg him as a guy who could switch like this. He's switching, staying in front of guys on the perimeter. And yeah, I'm really impressed. I know I've said on here a couple times that, like, I don't see him any way he's going to make the rotation. I'm honestly kind of second guessing myself.
It's nice seeing somebody who you can confidently depend on to get to the ball when he's in the middle, right? Like, you have Birch, who's there positionally, like, he knows what to do, and then he's just too short or too short armed. And it's refreshing to see Coloco, who doesn't fully get his positioning right yet, but he's so long and athletic that he can cover enough ground to do that. It's also nice to see Oren and I were at training camp last week, and we saw, you know, him working it in the post. And it's always good to see that the dividends are quick, right? Like, sometimes guys work on this stuff and it doesn't show for a long time, but for him to be such a quick learner, and have the confidence to do so is a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, he just looks mature. Like, another thing is just the speed of the game was too fast for him at summer league, and he was dropping passes, not knowing where they were coming from. He seems to really be a quick learner, because he just looks like the speed he's caught up to, and all he's had is, like, I guess some Rico Hines runs in a training camp. So I'm really impressed. Like, he clearly also gives them that other dimension, which we have all kind of said every time he comes on the floor. But like I was saying about how, oh no, my headphones just died. I was saying how, like, that switch heavy scheme really screwed the Raptors. I thought when Coloco got in there, it changed a little bit, because he could roll to the rim and actually create some pressure at the rim, and that freed up some shooting on the weak side. So he's definitely like an X factor in terms of when things aren't going right, you can put him in there and see if it changes.
Yeah, but the question that I think people will ask after a game like this, and maybe this too premature to ask, is that, you know, he's sort of been slotted as he's the 905 guy. He's building the next 905 dynasty, because that's what's happening with the 905 right now, if you're not paying attention. Do we see him making meaningful contributions with the big club?
Aiden, do you want to take this before you go?
I don't know. I don't know. Only because I think Birch is suddenly the guy looking in on the rotation. And then it's so then you're telling me that Coloco is going to play over Birch, basically. Right? Like, I don't know.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Coloco got in the game before Birch today.
Well, yeah, I know. But that, I think that's because they're slowly inching Birch back to game speed. But I mean, maybe there really is a competition here. It remains to be seen at full speed. If I'm wagering on this, I'm very narrowly saying no, and that he's just going to be a 905 guy, because it makes more. There's no sense rushing him. We're paying Birch. Birch has proven that when he is healthy and playing with the starting guys or the top starting guys, like, he's a plus player, right? So maybe we call him Coloco up, like when we call Pascal up in the old days, when it's certain teams that we need kind of that athletic big in the middle. Like, I think we will see him in spurts, but I think predominantly he's going to be 905.
Yeah.
On that note, I'm going to depart. Love to you all. Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. Later. Yeah. I probably lean 905 to start the season, but I was way more that way before the last couple of games. And if he keeps doing this in the preseason, I might change my mind. There's definitely a chance he gets in the rotation by the end of the season. Yeah. Let's talk about someone else, though, who you said Coloco. I thought Banton was really good today. He came in and, like, he didn't play the first half. And then when he came in, he just brought an energy and a relentlessness. Like, literally the first four possessions he was in the game was either he stole the ball or he laid the ball up on the other end. I thought his energy was great. And I thought, just like, he's always had those strides to the basket, but he didn't finish well. Like, Lewis had a piece today at Raptors Republic about how he's like, he was one of the worst transition finishers in the league last season, even though it looks good. And it just looks like his touch around the rim is a lot better, even if he's at 100% speed right now. And yeah, like, honestly, tough luck for Malachi Flynn. This guy has the worst luck you could imagine.
Yeah.
But Banton's, he's taking advantage of these opportunities, I think.
Yeah, and Banton actually fits the profile better anyways with the whole 6'9 thing we're doing. And the only reason Banton would or Flynn would play ahead of Banton would be because he's, I don't know, he could be a better shooter or a better handler of the ball in tight spots. But if Banton is able to close those gaps on Flynn, which it looks like he's doing in the first two games, then they're really then Flynn's position sort of becomes untenable, because then you get into the argument that what does Flynn do better than Banton to deserve a chance over him? And if Banton plays the way he played this game and the last game, and more so this game, you know, then it's very difficult to answer that question on what does Flynn do better than Banton. So, yeah, like this play right here, like the left-handed finish here in traffic, Flynn's not going to do that. Like, you need length to do that. So, and that seems to be the Raptors sort of, they use this move a lot. Like, Siakam does this a lot. OG tries to go like this. Scotty Barnes goes to the rim and tries to kind of lean in for the finish. That opportunity seems to be always available for the Raptors, and Banton is in a better position to take advantage of those situations than Flynn is. So, yeah, you're right. Flynn's luck kind of sucks. I can't wait for his dad to pipe up any day now with some sort of conspiracy theory. But yeah, it doesn't look good for Flynn on, you know, the attack is coming from the north and the south.
Yeah, I mean, Flynn still shoots a lot better than Banton. That's really the only thing. But I found it interesting that in the half court today, the Raptors were mostly playing Banton off the ball and just getting him catch and shoot looks, or really like catch and attack looks or cut looks, rather than having him handle the ball. Because, you know, he was playing with Doughton, I think, for most, or Pascal here for most of the game. So there was always like a primary ball handler. Actually, here he is really the primary ball handler. But yeah, at least in the second half, he was playing off the ball and he really made it work, which is the big question with him. Like, if the ball's not in his hands, can he be effective? I thought today he was. And defensively, both games, he's really made an impact with his size. We can go back and forth here. Anyone else you want to talk about? I think like all 20 guys played today.
I think Gabe Brown is probably deserves a
Gabe
a
Brown.
I mean, yeah. You know, the confidence, the southpaw. You love a guy who can sort of just here we go. This is the play where the pull up three. Come on. I mean, can you watch that clip again just so like we soak it in here?
I saw.
Nice. Just confidence of taking that shot with the score, what it is. The Raptors are down one with 2 minutes left, and this guy pulls up from two. This is like, if this was like a regular season game, he'd be in Raptors lore right now. It's just
absolutely. It's him and Jeff Doughton, who also, Jeff Doughton also looked good, but yeah.
He was the guy that I was thinking of when I mentioned the earlier comment about just better ball movement, ball handling, giving the ball up early. Even in this play, you saw this sequence happen a couple times early in the game, and you saw Scottie sort of drive all the way, or Siakam handle the ball all the way to the top of the 3-point line. Here, it's given up early because there's a guy ahead of you, and it pays off for the Raptors. So just, it's like, you know, you made the point earlier that, or Aiden made the point that people are sort of trying the new skill they learned in the summer in preseason. Like they're trying to testing it out, seeing what works. But these guys aren't doing that. They're fighting for their lives. They have no new skills to try out. They're like, I want to impress the coach to make the team. And coaches don't get impressed by one-on-one individual play. They get impressed by team play. So these guys are motivated to play like a team. And that's what they did in that second half. Unlike the starter who are more, you know, if you believe Aiden, kind of like testing out what they learn.
That's true. That just reminded me though, like my problem with Scottie this game was that every time he got the ball, he stopped it and looked around, and he's like a point guard and he wants to be the guy that's operating and telling guys where to cut and all that stuff. But I felt in this game way too many times he was stopping the flow of the offense. As soon as the ball found him, it was really sticking in his hands. And I want to see him make quicker decisions with the ball, just because he's going to have an easier time scoring and doing everything if he makes quicker decisions rather than letting the defense really key in on him. Gabe Brown, though, I went out on a limb on doing the show with the Raptors show with Alex, and I said, like, he's someone I would like to see make the team just because his skill set is so different from, like, the skill sets that we've kind of seen in terms of DJ Wilson and Champagne. I feel like a lot of these guys have pretty similar, Josh Jackson, like defense first guys. Gabe Brown is just like an elite shooter who can do it moving, who is not afraid to pull up. And as we saw in this game, the Raptors really do not have a lot of 3-point shooting still. And that is his case. If he's going to make the team, it is purely based on the shooting.
Yeah, let's actually talk about that, because I think that's sort of the elephant in the room here, which we haven't talked about yet, is our 3-point shooting. And other than Gary, I think he hit a couple threes. What does he look at here? No, he just hit one for five. Can you put this the box one. Score back up for a second?
Sorry, this is just me. This is just the one Gary three.
Okay, there it is. Okay, yeah, it looked pretty good though. And I think he had a mid-range jumper or something like that. What do we have? 1 for 5, 1 for 6. If Gary and Fred aren't hitting their shots, you know that Siakam is always going to be so-so. OG is hit and miss. Barnes, we can't expect that from him. So our main 2 3-point shooters are Gary Trent Jr. and Fred. If they have games like this, I think the offense will look like the way it did today, regardless of who the opponent is. And I think of the guys you mentioned, Gabe Brown, Josh Jackson, who is the best 3-point shooter there? Like who's the better 3-point
shooter? Gabe Brown. Yeah.
So sure. I would say he has the inside track to making the team on account of his 3-point shooting, because I think that's where the Raptors struggle the most. And I think that's where they need help the most.
Yeah, but I disagree, because I remember the Sam Decker, Isaac Bonga was picked over Sam Decker last year, and it was the same argument. It was like, and I remember Decker hit like 7 threes in the final preseason game, and we were like, he made his case. he's on the team. And they're like, no, we're going to take Isaac Bonga, who I think is playing in Germany this season. So, yeah, that maybe they learned.
That was a mistake. Maybe, hindsight tells us that was a mistake.
Yeah, maybe they learned from their mistake. But to me, the Raptors are just – they do not like one-dimensional players, even if that one dimension is the thing they desperately need. So, I don't know. In terms of the three-point struggles, look, Otto Porter's not playing, and he's going to give them that. OG, I put in the camp as a guy who I firmly believe is going to knock down three-pointers with regularity. But, yeah, I think everyone who expected Siakam and Scottie to come in this season, all of a sudden elite three-point shooters, were kidding themselves. Like,
yeah,
these things don't happen that quickly, if they ever happen at all. I'm a little skeptical with Siakam it'll ever come. So
I gotta ask you, you mentioned OG there. I mean, your criticism of Scottie on kind of stopping the play when he gets the ball, I feel I can say the same thing about OG today.
Well, I think the difference with the OG is that usually when he gets the ball, it's like in the post. And so, yeah, he's going to slow it down and back a guy in and see if the double comes and whatnot. With Scotty, it's so often in transition or at the perimeter where he stops the ball. And Scotty just gets more of the ball. So I think that's the difference. When OG gets the ball, like, it's a little rarer. And so I don't maybe blame him as much for looking to score. And he was efficient. That's the other thing. He was good today.
Okay. Like, I got to run. Let's take some questions.
4 of 8.
Let's take some questions and get out of here. Because this is a
scroll down.
It
will
be a good win against Boston. It is a preseason game. So what do we got?
Well, it wasn't a good win because the starters lost by a lot.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. The starters lost, but I'm not going to complain about a win against Boston. All right. Okay.
That's fair.
Okay. What is the path to a top-tier offense for this team? It seems like the same limitations for the last two seasons. Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree with this. I was actually thinking about this. I was like, since the championship year, we've had the 2020 year where we lost to Boston. Siakam blew that series. Mm-hmm. Then the next year was the tank season in Tampa. Last year was, you know, not a great end to the season. The offense did not look good there at all. And this year, it doesn't seem, you know, Otto Porter Jr. is the main addition on this roster. Besides that, we're relying on organic growth. I don't know if Nick Nurse actually has the tools to make this a good offense. And I'm also not sure if Nick Nurse is the brains that will make this a good offense. I feel they need some more help there.
Yeah, that's a fair criticism. In terms of a top tier offense, I don't think there is a path for it.
There's no path.
But I think to a top 15 offense or whatever, there's definitely a path. And it's you're really, really good in transition. Like, that's just the reality of, look at who this team is built around. Scottie, Pascal, Precious. These guys are absolutely dominant players in transition, or at least they have the capabilities to be. Plus, this is the most aggressive defense in the league with the point of getting out in transition. Like, the Raptors have to be more, because last year they got out in transition a lot, but they weren't at all very efficient. And so this year, if you want a better offense, that's low-hanging fruit to me. Like, be efficient in transition while still creating the same type of steals and turnovers you did last year. In terms of the half court, what were you going to say?
No. Continue. I mean, that's the transition is like, okay, get go and run. Yeah, but if teams know you're going to run, they're not like, you're not going to surprise them by running. Like, it becomes pretty obvious that you are trying to run because you can't score in the half court. That has never been a sustainable strategy in any sort of like in a playoff series, for example. Like,
not in a playoff series, but it has in the regular season.
In the regular season, sure, but what does that really mean? So, yeah, fine. You may win some games by running and like stamina-ing the other team a few times, but I don't think that's what the question is. I think the question is talking about a sustainable strategy, I think.
Like a playoff strategy.
How do we win a few games in the regular season?
You mean in the playoffs?
Yeah, in the playoffs.
Okay,
nothing matters.
That's fair. Okay, I think what we talked about last week or last episode, which was a little more Fred off the ball as a spot up shooter and giving OG Scottie and Pascal a little bit more of the ball, just because that way they're the guy at the end of the shot clock taking those shots, and I'm pretty confident with them doing that. I think OG is a huge piece of it too. Like, there is a reason the Raptors were whatever that stat was that they set in the game, like really, really good, like 30 and 15 or something with OG in the lineup last year. And a lot of it is defense, of course, but he is a different thing offensively than anyone else on that team. And he's not very refined or polished, but he's a really good three-point shooter. As we saw today, if you switch everything like the Celtics do, he will bully Marcus Smart in the post. And not a lot of guys can bully Marcus Smart that easily. So I really do think, like, to me, and you could tell me if you disagree, I think most Raptors fans would disagree with this, because I think most Raptors fans have, like, Pascal should be the number one scoring option, and then it should be Scotty, and then Trent or OG. I think OG should be number two in terms of the Raptors scoring options, and then I think Scotty and Trent come after that for me. Obviously, Fred is going to get his, probably be the third option, but yeah.
Yeah, I think OG is, like, see, I always think of in terms of, like, who is underutilized, like which of our offensive players remains underutilized. Like, if you want to improve it, like who can give you more than what they are giving you right now? And if you sort by that order, I think OG becomes sort of the obvious answer, followed by maybe Barnes. But as you said, in the last time we talked, Barnes doesn't seem to have like any sort of like set role in the offense. It's very much he's like living off the scraps of other people. Right. Do you agree with that? I think we both, we right. Okay. You're nodding your head for the people on the
Yeah, podcast. I agree. Yeah,
okay. So that leaves OG. And if you look at OG, the best way that he can score is, as you said, when he's playing against a team that switches a lot and he goes into the post, where he obviously has an advantage, regardless of whether it's guys Marcus Smart size or guys that are bigger than Marcus Smart. I think he can take bigger guys into the post too, because he's bulkier than them. That doesn't seem to be a strategy that Nick Nurse actually exploits a lot. He exploits it on occasion here and there, but I don't think we've ever seen OG become a post-up player where he may get like five or six possessions in the post. He doesn't do that. And I'm not even sure if Nick Nurse wants to do that, because if you do that, it sort of slows the offense down and goes away from the entire style of like running and being aggressive on the break. Like, so it's almost like if you go against your philosophy of running and transition play, you sort of squeeze OG out of the best thing he's capable of. It's like a conundrum that exists. And I think so far OG's been on the short end of that string. Now, do we expect the offense to sort of cater to OG to that level? Oh, OG, let's like run all these plays for you. No, I think he's got to step up and hit his mid-range jumpers, hit his pull-ups better, be quicker when he's using the screen, like reduce his dribble count by at least 30%, you know, because I think he over dribbles quite a bit before he has to take a shot or make a decision. So it's on OG as well, too. We can't just say Nick Nurse isn't doing that or the Raptors aren't doing that. I think OG himself has sort of needs to step up. Like, I mean, he's getting up there now. Like, he's, you know, he's a veteran in some way. So I think it's on him more than anything.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I think what you touched on is smart in terms of the other way to a top tier offense. I actually think it is a post heavy offense, because I think there's two different things, like transition and a half court. Even though the post is like the most slow way you can play, I just think that is how they are best built to have success, is with all these guys who are huge, makes other teams have mismatches, because you're going to have a two guard guarding Scotty Barnes. And I think, you know, Caitlin Cooper had a good stat on Samson's podcast previewing the season, and I apologize for not actually remembering it, but it was about how efficient the Raptors were passing out of the post. And I think that's buy more into that, like, more mismatch hunting, more going into the post and then pass out of it if a double comes, or just take it in yourself if the double doesn't come. I think really that, like, everyone's asking for more pick and roll, and I get it, but I think as you saw against a team like Boston, they just switch the pick and roll, and like, you don't get a whole lot about it. You can try to slip it, but in general you're not getting a lot out of it. So I think the post is the best way to defeat those switch heavy defenses, and I want to see them buy a little bit more into that.
And not, I think the Raptors are actually are even equipped to deal with teams that switch, because they do have guys who have a good first step for their, like Siakam. I think like he may not have a quick first step, but he has a long first step. Like it'll take him two strides to get to the rim, which he does. And once he extends, his shot is not the highest percentage shot, but it's still a pretty decent shot. And in those situations, the Raptors also do well to kick it back out to the wings. They're also good at that. But in those situations, it comes back down to three-point shooting, which we don't have. So no matter how you sort of slice and dice this thing, I don't think you can get away in today's NBA without excellent three-point shooting. And the Raptors do not have that. And it needs to be addressed. Wasn't addressed last year, not the year before. And I think it's still a shortcoming. We can talk about post-ups and, you know, Siakam doing better. But without strong and consistent three-point shooting, we're not going to be a force.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Like,
hey, we got more here. Let's do a question. Given Champagne being injured, does he lose his chance at the last spot? Jackson really has shown enough offensive game to wow me. Also, Gabe Brown has such a perfect 3-and-D skill. Champagne losing his last spot. What's his contract situation, first of all? Isn't he guaranteed this year?
No, he's fighting for a spot.
Oh, he's
no, he's spot. He's one of the last guys. Like it okay. Seems like it's between these three, maybe Wilson.
Okay.
Unless Wancho doesn't make the team, but he has some guaranteed money. That's why a lot of people think he's
well, that's the guy that I mean that's you stole, you know, that's what I would throw him into this mix. What has
he should
shown?
Be, yeah. He should be in the mix. It's just interesting that he talked on media day and like he seems like a really big, he seems pretty much guaranteed just based on the money they gave him. And also like you do not give guys at media day who are not guaranteed to make the team in general. So we'll see.
Is that a thing? Is that
in general? Yeah. I mean, I get it. He was in a movie. People wanted to talk to him, but I was surprised to see him there talking.
Okay, I mean, you know better than I do on that one, sure.
But we talked about this kind of last week and all, or last episode and also this episode. Like, yeah, I think Champagne has still shown more than any of these guys. But look, if he can't play any of these preseason games and it keeps going this way, then that's really bad luck. And, like, we have recency bias, but so do coaches. And eventually it's like, what have I seen recently? And if I've seen Josh Jackson play well in every preseason game and I haven't seen Champagne in 2 weeks, then of course it's human nature to go in that direction.
I don't know if the coaches have that level of recency bias.
Well, you know? Well, Nick was saying that they have a vote after every game and that some guys wanted to change their vote after the first game.
What is this, Survivor? They're playing Survivor?
Yeah, all the coaches have a vote after each game. But I was like, yeah, they probably take their vote, but at the end of the day, Nick is probably choosing,
you know? Yeah. Okay, so let's go into Champagne a little bit, because 36% 3-point shooter. I'm guessing he was higher from the corners, because I think that was his spot last year. Everybody's higher from the corners, but I think Champagne was like, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think he was like closer to 40% from the corners and 36% overall. Plus, he gives you offensive rebounding, which you need if you can't shoot well. So it's not like Champagne has skills that are less desired than these guys. And he has proven NBA experience last year. So does he lose his chance at the last spot? If I had to go, I would say no, he doesn't. I think the coaching staff still knows that he is a good three-point shooter from the corner. And he also gives you extra possessions through offensive rebounding. I don't think let's see what happens the rest of preseason. But so far, I don't think this has hurt Champagne. I mean, it has maybe reduced his chances a little bit, but I don't think it's gonna.
Yeah, he shot 40% on 6.3 attempts in the G League last season. I think that's the big thing, is that as he kind of went to the G League, he shot a lot better than he did in the NBA. So there's progression there. Yeah, it's like you said, we've talked about it. He's a good rebounder. He's a good shooter.
Hey, this is, I don't think we talked about this guy much. Jeff Doughton, Kelsey had a nice little piece on him too, on Raptors Republic. Might jump ahead of Flynn for backup PG minutes. Boy, everybody's coming for Flynn, man. Everybody is coming for Flynn. What are your thoughts on Doughton?
It's not, out of the question, honestly. Like he's not like a typical rookie in that he is, I think he did 4 years of college and then he's been around the G League. He's played in NBA games. Like this is not his first stint. And he is really impressive with the ball just in terms of like he does have a way of controlling the game, I think. He makes really smart decisions, and then when it's crunch time, he can get his own, like we saw today and we saw in Summer League. So yeah, I mean, if Flynn starts the year ahead of him, which I'm sure he will, but he can't knock down shots once again, and he's just a liability on offense, then I don't see why Jeff Doughton is so far behind Malachi Flynn that he couldn't potentially jump ahead of him. But ultimately, neither of them are going to play too much.
By the way, yeah, Aaron, I love talking about like these no-name guys in the preseason video. This is great. Let's take some more questions here, man. I'm kind of enjoying this now. If Oren gives up on Flynn, that's pretty much signing his death certificate. Why are you a big Flynn backer?
I don't know, Matt. Why are you saying that? I've almost given up on Flynn many times. So I'm right on the brink. But yeah, I've been nice to him this summer just because, you know, I'm giving everyone a chance. It's a refresh. It's a fresh start for everyone. Let's see what Malachi can do.
Okay. Any more questions here? Like, there's a lot of comments. Okay, here we go. After two preseason games, who would you keep or cut? Gabe, Justin, Doughton, DJ, or Bo Cruz? Okay, I'll go first on this one. I would cut Bo Cruz. DJ Wilson, nice job on the glass. Some nice rebounding in traffic tonight. But he would have to go. If it's three of these five I got to keep, I would keep the first three. But if I had to rank within those three, I would keep, I like what I saw of Gabe, and I like lefties. I got a soft spot for them. So I'm going to go Gabe, Justin, Doughton, DJ, and Bo Cruz. Actually, exactly in this order that he has written.
Yeah, I think this technically isn't right because Doughton already is guaranteed a spot. Right. Like, he has a two-way spot, so there's really no debating him. But I would take Justin first, then Gabe, then Bo Cruz, then DJ.
Hey, it's Josh. Should be in trouble, but as you said, he's got guaranteed money, so.
Yeah, but they cut Speed.
Svi
had guaranteed money, and they cut his ass. Oops, so, you know, it's possible. Okay. I don't know. We haven't seen enough. Like, let's wait till the end of preseason.
Raptors lost development coaches as of recently? How come offense still seems to stall? It seems like we have no set plays. Is it because of read and react offense? Good. I mean, I think we talked sort of about this a little bit earlier. I don't know what a read and react offense is. I mean, maybe that's going back to the old.
I think it just means. No, I think no. He's saying, is it because of read and react? Like that's what we have in place now. I think he just means that like right now it's a lot more loose rather than structured. Like guys can kind of determine what they want to do offensively rather than having a lot of structure.
Okay, I'm gonna date myself now, and I'm gonna talk about.
I'm not gonna understand it.
No, you will. You will. Okay. You know, whenever I heard this read and react offense, it reminds me of Phil Jackson and the triangle. Because I think that was the first time that as a basketball fan, I heard of the idea of sort of like no set plays and you just react to what the defense is giving you. And the triangle was, it took me years to even understand what was happening in the triangle because I was like a teenager when I was watching the Bulls. And as I grew up, I studied it a little bit more as I said, okay, this seems pretty complicated and you require a lot of like understanding on what the movement is and how you might, it's like a chess game. You almost have to think like one step ahead on what might happen and do that accordingly. If that's what Nick Nurse is asking of our offense, man, it sounds like a lot. Is that what he's asking for us to do?
No, he's asking basically guys to just ISO because there's no structure. Like he's just asking them to kind of control their own destiny on offense, I think.
What the hell does that mean? That doesn't mean you're not saying anything.
Like there's no structure. There's not a lot of set plays. He's asking them to kind of figure it out on their own, I think, is the complaint. Like, guys are just, there's a lot of freedom. If you see Precious Achiuwa take a step back three, that's because he has the freedom to take a step back three.
That sounds like, you know, and Nick Nurse knows obviously more than us combined times 1,000, but that seems like a bit of a cop-out of not wanting
to. Well, I think a lot of it is for the long haul, right? Like last season, it was understandable because you're trying to develop these guys' skill sets, and the only way to do that is through practicing reps and figuring out what works and what doesn't for yourself. But as we talked about last week, like this could be the season that those things get clamped down a little bit more, where it's not so much about development anymore and it's really about winning, and you've got to cut some of that stuff out and run some more structure.
Okay. All right. Let's take a couple more. That's it. How much longer is Nurse going to let Fred continue to take contested layups that turn into fast breaks?
I mean, I thought Fred was fine at the rim tonight. Like, what happened? He had a couple nice ones, and I think like one didn't go. I don't know.
I see the question's point though.
I do too, but what are you gonna do as Nick Nurse? Fred, no more layups. Like, you can't just do that shit, you know?
I mean, he is your starting point guard, man. You know, like every player will take some percentage of low percentage shots. And Fred's against Boston is at the rim. I thought he improved at the rim last year compared to the year before. So that was good. I thought his finishing improved. He had more English on his little kisses off the glass. So that was good. I think it's unfair to judge Fred against Boston because it's just not a good matchup for him. They sort of know what to expect. The Boston, even like, you know, even in transition, they post him up early with like 22 seconds on the shot clock. Like Fred's already got like Horford on him for some reason, like deep into the post. So they target him. So I would refrain from judging Fred based on this game, but your overall point is well taken. He does struggle at the rim, but he has improved over the last couple of years. So I don't think we should be entirely critical of Fred there.
Yeah. Someone asked how I would rate Precious tonight. He was not good. I'll give you that. I think it was a leading question, but he was good in transition. He had a couple of really nice takes in transition where he handled the ball the length of the court and finished at the rim. But yeah, the 3-point shot did not look good, which, like, as high as I am on Precious, like, I'm not ready to buy that he's a good 3-point shooter based on a half a season last season. So there's a lot still waiting to be told, but I also did feel like Precious is really doing that. Let me see what I can do here in the preseason stuff. Like, doesn't feel like he's really, he's just taking threes and like not really trying that hard, I think.
You know, it's like Lewis's piece on Siakam a couple. I don't know if you can pull it up, Kian. It's like, it's on the site. You should definitely check it out. Like, it's a really good piece, really as usual, well-researched and makes a very succinct point. It's about, do teams want Pascal Siakam shooting the ball? Here, I'll link it to you here. Okay, let me just post it here, okay? You should definitely check this piece out because I think a lot of what Lewis is talking about here, describing Siakam shooting, I think will eventually apply to Precious, is that he will be a good catch-and-shoot 3-point shooter, and he may not ever develop that pull up three that he tends to take these days. So I think same type of idea is applied with Precious. The question is, can he hit pull up? Sorry, not pull up. Can he hit spot up threes when other people set it up for him? That's how you would judge Precious's 3-point shooting, not based on the pull up stuff. He should not be taking those, or if he takes them, they should be few and far between.
Yeah. No, for sure. I honestly think a lot of these questions that we're getting go back to, like, fans have to ask themselves how they view this season. Like, because if you're going to come here and blame Precious for shooting threes or Fred for attacking the rim, like you said, he got better last season. Why did he get better? Because he had the freedom to attack the rim again and again, even if it didn't look good. So I think fans need to ask themselves, like, is this season, again, about development, or do I want the Raptors to fully buy in on winning and therefore limiting the growth potential, but really focusing on winning. Because those are kind of two different styles of play. And you got to ask yourself that question. If you are going to complain about guys doing things that they need to get better at, which in the short term is not going to look good and not going to help the team, then that means that you are all in and that you want them to trade for KD, for example. Like, you're all in. But if you're ready to let this group grow together over the next few years, then you have to be willing to accept some of this stuff.
So when Fred is asked in preseason, hey, what's the goal this year? And he replies, championship. Doesn't that tell you that the goal is winning and all these other things of development are like, yeah, of course, every team is developing. Every team's trying to get better. Every player's trying to like improve from the previous year. Everybody's doing that. But when the stated goal from the starting point guard is a championship, then you have to judge their play against whether they are good enough to win a championship. What do you think?
I think you're taking him a little too much at his word. I'll also point out that Masai said, do I think this team is good enough to win a championship this season? No, I don't. But I think they're good enough to take a leap. That's what Masai said. So I just don't buy what these guys say as much as how it goes back to you as a fan. Like, are the Raptors in that championship group? For me, they're not there yet. And that's okay. Like, this is another growth season for me. So I'm okay with some precious KD at you as setback threes, but you may not be. Draymond Green punched Jordan Poole today in practice.
I'm fine. I have my expectations of this team. And I think somebody on the site, like in the comment section, did like predictions. And I think I ended up with 47 wins. That's not a championship team.
That's worse than last season.
That's like a sixth seed. That's where I think this team is, unless they actually address the elephant in the room, which is their 3-point shooting. And I know Otto Porter Jr. isn't playing, but I don't think Otto Porter Jr. has averaged like 3 threes in his career. He has had one season where he took more than 5 threes a game. That's not the guy you're going to rely on to open things up. It needs to be a collective effort. Otto Porter Jr. is a part of it, but it's got to be more than that. And I just don't see the Raptors becoming a, you know, top 10 three-point shooting team or a top 15 three-point shooting team this year. I just don't see it.
I don't see it either, but I'll say this, though, in terms of like ceiling for this team, I could see them win a playoff series or two if OG, Fred, and Gary are all hot at the same time. Like, that is the path.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Fine.
I'm an optimist.
The top 9 teams in the East can make that claim.
Like and subscribe to the podcast.
Okay. Let's get out of here.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back here on Friday night where the Raptors are playing another preseason game. They're playing Houston?
Houston.
Yeah, they're playing Houston. So we'll be back here then. As always, subscribe to the Raptors Republic YouTube channel. Support us on the Raptors Republic website. And yeah, thanks for tuning in.
We got to promote our subscription model, man.
Yeah. Oh. For all you readers out there.
Yeah.
Raptors Republic has gone to a two-tiered content system where some of the editorial content is going to be paywalled for the cheap price of $6 a month. So if you are a big Raptors fan and you like reading about this team and getting smarter about this team, you should definitely go subscribe for $6 a month to all the great written content. I write on there, Aiden writes on there, all the wrap-up guys write on there, in addition to Samson and Joshua and Lewis and a lot of people. Go ahead, Zerar, why don't you finish this off?
Subscribe, man. It's worth it. It's completely worth it. As the season goes, it doesn't matter if the Raptors suck or if the Raptors do great. Either way, we're going to dissect the hell out of it. And I also intend on writing a little bit more this year.
Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm going to make my own video saying why you should subscribe. Oh, okay, So this is just a little teaser.
Hey, so maybe next episode we talk about sort of this point, which we did not talk about. And for the podcast listeners, it's where is our perimeter defense?
It's like, more so that the defense is so aggressive Anyways, it is.
Are we going to get into this? No, we're not going to get into this. Let's defer that.
I was frustrated today, though.
Till next time. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.